Hi there, I'm Stefan T. Lawade, and welcome to the first part of my video lecture series, which I'm calling Advanced STL. So the prerequisites for this series are you need to be familiar with the STL. You need to know that it means Standard Template Library, and you need to be comfortable with its interface. So if I say something like vector or shared pointer, or if I talk about core language concepts like overloading, partial specialization, that sort of stuff, you need to be familiar with it. But you don't need to be familiar with the internals of the STL. That's what I'm going to be talking about, because there's a lot of interesting things to be learned there. So the first point I want to make is that there are no books. At least not that I've seen. You can find lots of books explaining the basics of C++, even intermediate level. And there are a few advanced books about the gory details of templates, but never one that I've seen that will go through a standard library implementation for C++ and explain how it all works. Because there's so many moving parts, such a book would be like 10,000 pages, and would rapidly become outdated. If I just look at our implementation, it's dramatically changed between Visual Studio 2008, 2010, and the next version that we're working on. It doesn't do you any good if you go explain how something works and then it radically changes. With this series, I hope to be able to shed some light on all the tricky things that we're doing inside the STL so that you can gain a better understanding of how it's implemented and perhaps use some of these tricks in your own code. Next sort of disclaimer, important thing to understand, is that the STL contains sort of equal parts of magic and weirdness. So as you know, the STL has to do a lot of things. It has to support a whole lot of different ways that people can use it. As you know, everything in the STL, almost everything, is a template, and they can be instantiated in arbitrary types, built-in types like int, pointers to members, pointers to functions with arbitrary calling conventions, user-defined types, and from my perspective, as an STL implementer and maintainer, if something can be instantiated on a user-defined type, that means the user, in this case you, is actively working to do the craziest things possible. I've seen people with explicit copy constructors. Please don't do that. It's horrible. There are classes that overload the address of operator, like ccomputer. Making the STL work with that sort of stuff has been a pretty large undertaking. And we have to support all of these different ways that the STL can be used because the C++ standard says that it should work. So in order to support this massive amount of flexibility, we do a lot of relatively magical things in the STL that you won't usually find in less generic libraries. If you look at something like a networking library, well, pick a networking library outside of Boost, or a graphics library, it's going to be very focused on its domain, and you're not going to see templates all over the place working with arbitrary user-defined types. The STL is very different. So there's a lot of magical stuff in there that can be very confusing if you're not used to it. The other thing about the STL is that it contains a lot of weirdness. Some of that is due to the guarantees of the standard. For example, one of the big things that I want to warn people away from imitating is the STL's use of, I guess I can call this, to a leading underscore capital identifiers. So if you look at the STL's implementation, all of its internal types and even function parameters, they begin with an underscore and a capital letter. And this is ugly. It's, in fact, I refer to it as ugly identifiers. And this is actually for a reason. That's because if you look at the standard, the idea is that users are defining their own functions, their own classes, their own macros. Macros are the worst. With whatever names that they choose, but such user-defined identifiers shouldn't be allowed to conflict with things coming from the standard library. It would be very annoying if the standard library chose to use a name that you were using in your own code, and suddenly you've got a duplicate class definition or macros are stomping all over the place. That would be bad. So what the standard says is that identifiers of this form and a couple other forms are reserved exclusively for use by the compiler and standard library. It says the implementation, but that's just standard use for compiler and standard library. So in the standard library, we're very careful to use such identifiers. So if we define a macro or a class that's purely internal to the STL, we'll uglify it, and that way there's no way that we could conflict with the user identifier, even if it's a macro. And as long as users are careful to stay on their side of the dotted line and use plain named identifiers like this with lowercase or even all underscore, say you've got a macro like this, this is totally fine. This is all user space. This is users. This is the STL. There's no chance of conflict. The problem is that as soon as people start looking at the STL implementation, they see all these use of these uglified identifiers, and they just start imitating it. This is actually the exact opposite of what you want to do. So unless you are the standard library, you want to use plain name identifiers. If you look at a library like Boost, even though it follows standard library conventions very closely, it's very careful to not use forbidden names. So that's just one of the many weird things that might not be obvious at first glance in the STL. There's a lot of other things that we do that are weird. So what I'm encouraged is to have a full understanding of some technique before you go use it in your own code, rather than just randomly copying whatever conventions the STL uses, because you might be copying something weird that doesn't belong in user code. We've got a bunch of stuff to deal with, things like calling conventions that are rather ugly, or especially to be compilable as both native and under /CLR or even CLR pure. A lot of weird stuff in there. Then there's also a very small amount of stuff in the STL that's just plain bad, either bugs or things that are just ugly that I'm trying to fix whenever I get a chance, but should definitely not be imitated. So proceed with caution. Is what I would say. And finally, the last thing that I want to advise against is don't be evil. If you are learning internals of the STL's implementation, you should not go write code that assumes the existence of those internals, because they change. The great thing about our standard library implementation is that we break backwards binary compatibility with every major version. So if people try to link code compiled with the 2008 STL against code compiled with the 2010 STL, definitely that won't work static linking. And if you have DLLs passing STL objects to each other, then they have degree on their major version. So it's okay to have separate DLLs compiled with 2008 and 2010, as long as their interfaces are only C or COM, because those are stable ABIs. And the other thing is, not only do we break binary compatibility every major version due to things like optimizations and R-value references and what have you, we also radically change our implementation for correctness and performance in ways that still satisfy the standards guarantee, but could break people depending on particular behavior. So just because you can see all of the headers that we're shipping and debug into our small separately compiled source files, that doesn't mean that you should rely on that implementation knowledge. Instead, you should code your programs to guarantees offered by the standard or particular guarantees documented on MSDN. So definitely reading the STL is not a license to start assuming that the implementation will forever be that way, because I can guarantee that it will eventually change. And in fact, once the next preview release of VC11 becomes available, I'll probably start using it to show you what we're doing. Here I'm running Visual Studio 2010 RTM or VC10 RTM. So if you're watching this from the future, where the next version is already out, then be aware that the implementation has probably changed. So today, I wanted to start off pretty gentle, looking at Shared Putter, which is my second favorite class after Vector, because its implementation is relatively simple but contains some neat tricks that are actually quite useful in your own code. And it's also relatively new, It was added to the standard as part of TR1, and then it became part of the C++ OX standard in development, and it was originally from Boost. And we shipped the first version of it in 2008 SP1. So it's relatively new code, and I even wrote a little bit of it. So let's pick into exactly how its guts work. Now, remember I said I'm assuming familiarity with the STL's interface, so I'm assuming you already know what shared putter is, how to use it, but you've never looked into what it's actually doing. So here I have a source file that just exists so I can debug into it. It's not going to do anything useful. I've got a couple shared putters. First I have SP1 that is constructed using the traditional method by newing up an int, and another one, SP2, that's constructed using the new to C++ OX function called makeShared. There is also a bunch of other ways to construct shared putters. I actually have a presentation I'll bring up from BoostCon 2010 that I wrote that shows the internal representation of a shared putter, and this is a lot easier to understand than the code that we'll be looking at very shortly. So the thing about shared putter is that internally, the shared putter object here, the green box, stores two raw pointers, one named putter and one named rep. And the putter raw pointer points directly to the owned object. Here I'm depicting a shared putter int that points to an int equal to 1729. So the existence of this putter data member means that when you dereference a pointer, it has zero, when you dereference a shared pointer, it has zero overhead. You're just grabbing the first raw pointer in the class and dereferencing it. So there's no double indirection, no offsets, no vtables or anything. Zero overhead, wonderful. But shared putter also needs to do this reference counting thing that you may have heard of. So it's got the second raw pointer called rep that points to an internal type. And here in gray are the names of these types. As you can see, they're ugly identifiers that I mentioned. Rep is a pointer to underscore ref count, and that's a base class. The particular derived classes that it could be, there's five different ones. The simplest one, or sorry, I think I might have gotten that backwards. The base class is ref count base. The derived class could be ref count or ref count del or ref count del alloc. So let me scribble on the whiteboard a bit. I don't want to actually go compile anything. I'm going to erase these little tips here. So the simplest way, the traditional way, sort of, to construct a shared putter is to say shared putter, and because we don't care what the pointing to object is, I'm just going to say int. SP1, you can say new int, and then you know initialize it from something. However, you can also give a shared pointer a custom deleter. So perhaps instead of just newing up an int, you got some raw putter somewhere, and this was obtained through a special method. The simplest one could be malloc. I don't know why someone would want to actually mix malloc and shared putter in a production code, but you could certainly do it in a test program. If you get a shared putter constructed from just a single raw pointer, it's going to call delete on that. But if you get a raw pointer from somewhere special, then you're going to need a custom way to delete it. So I could say putter and then address of the CRT function free. So this is a custom deleter, and whatever this object is, it could be a function pointer like this, it could be a lambda or a actual handwritten function object class, this will be invoked to get rid of the pointer, as hopefully you're familiar with. And you can also can construct a shared putter with a custom allocator. This is used to control how the shared pointer allocates and deallocates its reference count control block. But let's just think about the custom deleter. So imagine putter came from malloc and I need to get rid of it from free. I could have another one, SP2, that just has that plain old new int. So when SP1 is destroyed, it needs to go invoke this custom deleter free. When SP2 is destroyed, it's going to invoke by default delete on its raw pointer. However, both of these types are shared putter int. I can even write it out as well. And this just works. The great thing about this class, the reason why it's my second favorite class behind only vector, is that it just works. It's so simple. But there's magic going on here, deep magic that whenever I've explained it to someone, they are astounded at what's happening. The fact that a shared pointer was constructed with a custom deleter or not is forgotten. It does not appear in the shared pointer's type. So if I have a shared pointer constructed through the traditional method with everything default, or with a custom deleter, or custom deleter and custom allocator, regardless of that, the type is always shared pointer on int. So it's templated on the object type, but not on whether it has a custom allocator or custom deleter. This is very different from vector. Vector is templated on its allocator type. So yeah, it defaults to std allocator, and you don't need to go type that out. But if you have a std vector with a custom myalloc, that appears in the vector's type. Shared pointer doesn't behave like that, and yet it works. How is the shared pointer remembering that it's storing this custom deleter? Or we've got make shared. So let me go back to my slides here. Make shared, new to OX, is more than simply syntactic convenience. It is more simpler that I don't have to mention the type int here twice. With make shared, I can just say it once and put auto here. Ignore this horrible IntelliSense. I'll get to that in a bit. But in addition to just being simpler to write, shared make shared is also more efficient. Let me go back to this traditional implementation of shared putter. Shared putter has a separate reference count control block, we call it, from the owned object. Whereas what make shared does is it can stuff the owned object here in a storage data member in the same chunk of memory as the reference count and other internal machinery. It performs a single dynamic memory allocation. The reason why it can do this is because when you call make shared t, you're giving it the arguments for an object to be constructed. So the shared putter can construct both an object and its ref count control block at the same time. So it can perform just a single dynamic memory allocation. So if I have a shared putter int, I could have sp3 of the same type equaling make shared. And yet, give it some initializer. And yet, when sp3 is destroyed, it needs to invoke something different. It needs to call delete. It needs to destroy the object in place and then delete the reference count control block. Whereas here, we have to delete two different things, both the object and its ref count control block, separately. And yet, this doesn't appear in the type. How is shared putter remembering all this information without baking it into the type like vector does? Well, the trick there is called type erasure. That's the formal name for it, although sometimes I say type forgetting. And let us debug into shared putter and see how it works. So let me compile and run this program and step into the construction of shared putter. So here I'm just using F10 and F11 to step in and out. So let's step in. This is going to step into new itself. I don't care about that. Let's step back into shared putter. Here's shared putter's constructor. Let me see if I can pin this. Hide everything. Oh, maybe I didn't want to do that. Okay, it's a little better. Okay, so shared putter's constructor, you can see here, we're already seeing those ugly identifiers, so you just have to apply a mental filter to think, oh, I'm just seeing a plain U there rather than underscore capital UX. And it's being constructed from a raw pointer, so let's step in. We've got some internal member functions, again, ugly identifiers. And here we go. It is a private member function template, and it's doing a try reset P0 to new ref count. So when you construct a shared putter for, through the traditional method with a raw pointer that has already been newed up or mallocked up or from wherever, shared putter internally will allocate up an object of type ref count and give it the raw pointer to store. So let's scroll up, and actually I think I can just jump to definition. Let's do that. Go to definition. Oh, it sees two of them. Why does it see two of them? Here we go. This is what I want. So internal class, again, ugly identifier. That's how we know we're working with internals. And it derives from this class called refCountBase. And this is going to remember how to get rid of the pointer to object. So it has a couple member functions here that are important. And notice that they're virtual. This is where the magic begins. One of these virtual member functions knows how to destroy the pointer to object, the managed resource. just by calling delete on the internal reporter. And then it has another member function to get rid of the reference count control block itself. It executes delete this, which is perfectly okay to execute as long as you don't refer to anything else after that statement. And this derives from a base class that I mentioned, refcountBase. Let's take a look at that. RefcountBase is immediately above, and what RefcountBase stores is the strong refcount uses, the weak refcount long weeks here, and it declares these virtual member functions destroy and delete this. So every refcount control block is going to have strong and weak refcounts, but they have different ways of deleting the pointer to object. If I scroll down, here we go. Here's refcountdel. This is a separate derived class for when you have a custom deleter. Its constructor will store that custom deleter, and then when you actually destroy the shared pointer, it invokes this destroy virtual member function and invokes whatever custom deleter you had stored, maybe a function pointer, maybe a lambda, or a actual class on that stored pointer. But it still is going to just call delete on the refcount control block. And then there's another one that stores a custom allocator, and so forth. So the way that shared pointer is performing this type erasure, let me go back to this handy diagram, is its internal rep pointer points to refcountBase and invokes virtual member functions, which are actually implemented by refcount or refcountdel. And let's go back to the actual constructor. I shouldn't have hidden the thing. My call stack. Here's call stack. So shared pointer is templated on the type of the object that it's pointing to, but it's not templated on custom deleter type. Here it has a constructor that's templated on some pointer that you're giving it, a type U that could be different from its own type T. Right below is its constructor from a custom deleter. This constructor is templated on the deleter type, but the object itself, the shared pointer, is not, because this constructor will new up a refcountdel templated on the deleter type, but then we store only a pointer to the base class. This trick of pointer to have an internal pointer to a base class that has virtual member functions, this is what powers type erasure. And the cost is simply a virtual function call, which is quite fast. I bet you didn't know if you were only familiar with shared pointer's interface that it was actually powered by inheritance internally, even though externally it just looks like a plain old template. Okay, so that is how type erasure works. Let me show you what make shared looks like. Let me go back to my code here. So step out and step into an invocation of make shared. So make shared, it uses the same type erasure stuff. But the way that it looks like, and I've actually had people misusing make shared, so even though I expect you to be familiar with the STL's interface, it never hurts to hear how to use it properly. Make shared looks like this. You say make shared of T. T is the type that you want to new up and have a shared putter to. So this could be make shared int, make shared string, make shared vector of stuff, whatever you like. And then you follow it with whatever args that you want to construct it with. So this could be args0, args1. If you're constructing a make shared vector int, then perhaps you have a couple iterators here or calling other functions. However you would construct a plain old T by itself with args0, args1, whatever, potentially empty, you could just say T paren paren, you put the same list of arguments here for make shared T. You do not specify the argument types here. If you try to do that, you'll land in a world of pain. Please don't. Make shared is a perfect forwarding function, yay, R value references, and will perfectly forward whatever arguments you give it to T's constructor as if you had constructed an object of type T itself. But along the way, it's going to also construct a reference count control block and do other stuff. So let's see how that looks. Let's step into this. And here is make shared's implementation. And this is a free function templated on both the type of the object that you want and the argument types, and that's found through perfect forwarding. And it returns by value a shared pointer to T. Or in the STL, we always say tie when we mean T. So we new up a reference count control block, and this one's special. This one's called refcountobj, and this is the one that not only stores the strong and weak ref count and the other machinery that we need, but it stores the object itself. And then we forward whatever constructor arguments you gave us, and we will construct a shared putter with that, and we need to hand it its reference count control block and do some other setup machinery. Now, what I wanted to point out here is one of those weirdnesses in the STL. Take a look at what this template looks like. Template class tie underscore capital C underscore class underscore arg 0. That is nonsense. Make shared taking arg O AO ref ref, also gibberish. And then internally it says ref count obj AO A1 forward. This is a nightmare. What is this nonsense? Well, remember that make shared needs to be able to accept an arbitrary number of constructor arguments. We don't know if you're constructing an object that takes two arguments in its constructor, or five, or zero, or seven, or whatever. And we certainly don't want to overload make shared a bunch of times for 0, 1, 2, 3, 4 arguments, and so forth. Now, in C++ OX, the way that this is solved is with variadic templates. Make shared is a variadic template, has a single definition, contains lots of dot-a-dots, which has been repurposed for variadic templates. It's all very clean and elegant, but that's not implemented in Visual Studio 2010. Yet we really, really want to provide make shared. So what we've done is we've simulated or faked variadic templates with preprocessor machinery, which is horrible and ugly, but it gets the job done. And in fact, all of this stuff, let me take you to what argo AO ref ref looks like. I can jump to definition. This is a macro. And what we're doing is, I can sketch this out for you. If you look at the memory header, okay, we are going to include subheaders. And I'm going to skip over a bunch of steps here. If you compile with slash show includes, actually I can write this out, show includes, I believe it's case sensitive like all front-end options. This will print out a line every time a header is included, allowing to see what's going on behind the scenes. So we'll include a bunch of headers, there's something here, and then we'll include a subheader called xx_shared. One of these helper headers is xfwrap1, and there's a couple others. Again, here's another STL convention. In our implementation, internal headers that are not meant to be included directly by users begin with an X, because conveniently nothing in the standard begins with an X yet. And super secret headers that are included repeatedly begin with two X's. So that's just what XX shared means. And what happens is we actually include XX shared repeatedly. We actually include it 11 times. I believe 11 is the correct number. This is very strange. This is not a normal idempotent header that's included once, exactly once. Instead, we're including it repeatedly. And the reason why we're doing this is the first time we include it, we make all of these macros expand to stuff appropriate for zero arguments. The second time we include it, we make these macros appropriate for a single argument, and then two arguments, and three, and so forth. And that's what all of this preprocessor machinery is. This is going to expand to, if you pick through these macros, and they are very nasty, arg O ref ref AX O, comma arg 1 ref ref AX 1, and so forth, depending on exactly which occurrence of XX shared we're on. So this template is class tie, comma class arg O, comma class arg 1 as many times as necessary, and make shared is being overloaded on argo, refref, axo, and so forth. So this is how we simulate variadic templates. It all works when we get the macros correct, but it looks like the language we're working in is not quite C++. So if you were unfamiliar with this, now you know a little more. In this XX shared header, which is one of the few headers in the STL I wrote completely from scratch, replacing some earlier stuff, we actually store in this header constructors for the refcountobj control block because it needs 11 constructors from 0 to 10 arguments to actually store its object. as well as overloads of make shared and allocate shared its companion function. So rather than have one exec shared for just those constructors, another exec shared for make shared and allocate shared, I stuffed them all into a single header, and we actually included a few times turning on other macros to define the make shared functions or ref count obs constructor and so forth. So lots of macros going on here. And to users, it's all invisible. Well, mostly invisible. Let me go back to my main function. If you hover over an IntelliSense make shared, let's see, I was getting IntelliSense at one point. Oh, maybe when I'm running the program. Yeah, here we go. Hover over. Yes. You can see the IntelliSense compiler, it looks at the preprocessed file after we've spammed out our 11 overloads of make shared. And it doesn't know that it's simulating variadic templates. So this does pollute IntelliSense pretty badly. But hey, at least it compiles. So that's always good. So if you had ever seen that sort of nonsense, that's what's going on there. I think I have time to explain one more trick in Shared Putter's implementation. And that is the nature of its ref counts. So let me look at the watch window, which I had here. Windows. Oh, I have to be running to execute the watch window. Let's do, oh, and I probably want to show some weak putters here. So let me change this code. Get rid of, actually I like make shared. We'll keep make shared for now. So we've got an auto SP, make shared int, completely random number. And let's construct a couple copies. Auto SP2 is SP, auto SP3 is SP, that's good enough. And let's construct some weak putters. Weak putter to int WP, construct from SP. And let's make some copies of that too. Auto WP2 is WP. Ordinarily cramming multiple definitions of a variable onto a, or multiple definitions of separate variables onto a single line is poor practice. I don't like to do it, but here it's going to save me typing, so I'm going to do it anyways. WP3 is WP. I want like 5 of these. Okay, lots of copies. And at this point, I just want a breakpoint. Okay. Pile. This program is not doing anything actually useful. I just want to look at the ref counts. Okay, so let's open up the watch window, which I had accidentally hidden before. What I wanted is that little pin, but I guess I clicked the wrong button. Watch window. Yes. And let's take a look. Unfortunately, this font is small, and I do not know how to make it larger. If we look at SP here, and we can see that the VS IDE is doing one of its fancy tricks. It's actually visualizing what... Why is this gibberish? This should be make sure to end. I haven't reset it yet. Hold on. I want to actually make sure that I'm debugging something that makes sense. Stop. Breakpoint. Start. There we go. Okay. Apparently it had stepped beyond that reset. Okay, so the Visual Studio IDE here is actually showing me a lot of useful information. What it's doing is it's running what are called visualizers to pick through the representation of the STL object and present it in a human-friendly form. So we can immediately see that this is a shared putter 7 to 1729. With 3 strong refs and 5 weak refs, and that's exactly how many copies I made. There's 3 copies of the shared putter and 5 copies of the weak putter. There's one hiding over to the right there. And we can see what it points to. We can crack it open and see the value. If this was a struct with interesting data members, we could look at all of its values. And it's even going to tell us that we constructed it with... This is actually not correct. constructed it with make shared. Something's a little funny in my VS installation. This should be showing make shared. But let's ignore that because I don't actually want to look at the visualizers. If you want to look at the representation of an STL object and disable those visualizers, typing comma exclamation mark or comma bang will turn them off. And you can look directly at the representation, which is admittedly horrible. That's why we hide it from you. And you can see here that the shared putter derives from a class called putterBase, and it's got that ref pointer I told you about that points to an object of type refCountObj. It had better say obj. No, it's showing refCountInt. Yeah, that is definitely, that's why the visualizer is wrong here, because that's actually not the derived type. I wonder, I guess my installation is corrupted or something. This type is really refCountObj, and fortunately I don't care about that. It has a couple data members here, which are the strong and weak refCounts. Now, we have three shared putters, and the strong refCount uses is set to 3. We have 5 weak putters here, but the weak refCount is set to 6. Why is it 6 and not 5? Well, this is one of the tricks in the STL that actually makes it more performant than might otherwise be the case. So imagine, and I'll show you a traditional constructed shared putter for simplicity. We've got putter, we've got rep. Putter points to some object. Rep points to the ref count control block. And this has an internal pointer there and some V pointers. And it's got the strong ref count. And actually, they're called uses and weaks. So this is uses, and this is weaks. Okay. So when you're looking at this for the first time, perhaps if you're writing a reference counted smart pointer yourself, you might think, oh, well, uses, say that I've got 3 shared putters and 5 weak putters. Well, uses will just be 3, and weaks will be 5. If you work through how the implementation would actually work, especially if your shared putter and weak putter have to support the usual thread safety guarantee for multi-threading, this actually isn't sufficient, because this first ref count controls when the object itself is going to be deleted. So if all the shared putters pointing to an object are destroyed or reset or reassigned, then the object needs to be destroyed, but the ref count control block needs to hang around so that weak putters can be informed of the object's destruction. When all of the weak putters and shared putters to an object are destroyed or reset or assigned, then the reference count control block itself must be destroyed so that we don't leak memory. So if we had uses directly correspond to the number of shared putters, which it does, and weaks directly correspond to the number of weak putters, which it does, imagine that we are in a weak putters destructor or reset, and we know that this weak putter is going away, so we have to decrement weeks. So maybe we looked at it and it was initially 1. So if we decrement it, it goes to 0. Now, we can be informed that it's gone to 0 with interlocked compare exchange, I believe. But, interlocked decrement returns that to us. But we need to know if there are any shared putters as well keeping the object around. Because it would be very bad if we destroyed a weak putter and that nuked the reference count control block while a shared putter was still around. So if uses directly correspond to shared putters and weeks directly corresponded to weak putters, then when we decremented the weak ref count, we would additionally have to look at the strong ref count and see if this was non-zero. And then if it was 0, delete the reference count control block. Doing that atomically is either impossible on x86 or very nasty, and even on x64, it's not something you would like to do. So instead, what we say is, if you have X shared putters and Y weak putters pointing to an object where all of these are 0 or more, then this uses variable is just X, the number of shared putters, whereas the weeks count, it's slightly misnamed, what it is it's Y. And then if X is greater than 0, then it's plus 1. I can actually write it in C++ E's. plus if x is greater than 0, then 1, otherwise 0. So what this is saying is that every shared putter has a strong ref stored in uses on the object itself. As for the reference count control block, every weak putter has a reference on the ref count control block, and all of the shared putters collectively own a single reference keeping the ref count control block alive. Now, why do we do this? We know that we can't just have simply y, but what if we just said weeks is going to be equal to x plus y? Well, imagine what would happen whenever you construct or destroy a shared putter from, say you're copying one shared putter into another. You need to go increment uses for sure, but do you need to go increment weeks? If weeks was simply represented as x plus y, you would have to. And then when the shared putter was destroyed, you would have to go decrement it again. That is a ton of useless work. You know that as long as any shared putter exists, that it's going to be keeping the ref count control block alive, no matter how many there are. So with this scheme, this avoids a ton of, relatively a ton, of useless interlocked incrementing and decrementing. What happens is that if you construct a shared putter to an object, uses will be set initialized to 1, and weeks will also be initialized to 1. If you construct a ton of copies, uses will be incremented to 2, to 3, and so forth. If you construct a lot of weak putters to it, this will be incremented to 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 5, say. And as you destroy the shared putters, this will go down again. Say it goes down all the way to 1. When the last shared putter is destroyed, this will be decremented down to 0. The shared putter will detect that. It'll say, I am the last shared putter keeping that object alive. Let's go delete it, or invoke the custom deleter on it, or whatever else I need to do to get rid of that object. And let's perform a single decrement on the weak ref count. So this would go down to 4. So we've replaced, if there were n shared putters being constructed and destroyed, n interlocked increments and decrements with a single decrement at the very end of all of those shared putters' lifetimes. So that little bit of representation weirdness is actually buying us efficiency. It's not possible to get that any more efficient. So that's all I wanted to show you about shared putters implementation today. I said it would be gentle, relatively so. This series is very experimental. This is the first time I'm stepping through the STLs implementation and explaining all of the gory details of how it works. So I'd like to hear in the comments if you found this too easy, too hard, am I going too fast, too slow, and if there's anything else that you would like to see. I'll generate topics as I think of them. We may be looking at some of the algorithmic optimizations in the STL. But if you've been dying to learn about how something or other in the STL works, then let me know. I may also devote an episode or two of this series to explaining particularly tricky core language concepts, maybe partial specialization or something like that. So even if you have a question not directly related to the STL, but something complicated-ish in C++ that you think might be appropriate, let me know, and I'll see if I can film a part for you. Until then, see you next time.